Hi, my name is Lou Leal. I'm a docent here at Jack London State Historic Park, where I've been a docent for the last 15 years. What I hope to do today is to give you some good information and maybe some new information about Jack London.
Wonderful. Well, thank you. Thank you so much, Lou. As we told you, one of the things we're interested in is getting an idea how writers began writing.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that I chatted with you briefly and you had some insights about that. How did Jack London go from being a poor kid to being the first millionaire writer?
Well, it is an interesting story because being poor is probably the biggest motivator for Jack London. When he was growing up, he noticed that some people had a lot of money and could afford nice clothes. He, on the other hand, had clothing that was not even new. So he was used to dressing shabby, and he was used to being his rough self because he didn't know anything else. But he started to notice the world around him as a very young child. And this is a very important factor in his development to become a writer because he was noticing the inequalities in society at a very early age. He also got fascinated with books at a very early age, so that he was reading books with vocabulary that would have been considered way above his level, even as at an early age of, say, 6 or 7 years old.
Was that the Oakland Museum? Or? Oakland Library?
The Oakland Library kind of became his home away from home right around the time when he was aged 9. They had just moved from from Livermore, where his parents had unsuccessfully started a chicken ranch that fell apart when the chickens got sick and started dying, and his parents could not afford to pay the mortgage. So they moved to Oakland, and that was when he really discovered the Oakland Library. What was fortuitous for Jack at this early age was meeting the librarians there at the Oakland Public Library, and in particular, the most notable was Ina Coolbrith, who later became California's first poet laureate.
Oh, really?
Yes, she was the librarian there, and she took it on her own to guide Jack in his subject matter, because what Jack was doing was going to any shelf and pulling a book off the shelf, because he thought that the more he read, the more he could learn, and the faster he could become educated. He was much more interested in the books in the library than he was in what he was being taught in elementary school. He went on to finish elementary school, but then he started high school and dropped out for various reasons. In particular, they were reasons to pursue adventure.
Razzle dazzle.
The razzle dazzle was the boat that that he bought with money that was lent to him by his wet nurse, Virginia Prentice, who loved Jack as if she was her own child. She was an ex-slave who had become wet nurse when Jack's mother was not able to produce milk. Essentially, She raised Jack during the first 2 years of Jack's life. The fact that he was more interested in adventure showed his ability to pick up what was happening in the world around him that made him more curious to seek out more and more information. So he wanted to see other parts of the world. He wanted to go beyond the San Francisco Bay, and that's why when he was a teenager at age 16, he signed on to be an able-bodied seaman on a seal hunting ship that took him up into towards the Bering Straits of Japan, and that's where he got acquainted with Japanese culture. This was fascinating to him. He was always interested in the way other people lived, because he himself thought of his background and his life in growing up really was not anything that would interest anyone. He was out for some adventure to partially to get away from what he had seen and lived through. In Japan, even as a teenager, he went all around in the village and where they stopped, he picked up a lot of information about how the local people lived. He had the fortunate ability to get along with everyone. He was always smiling. He had a very sensitive face. His features were quite sensitive, and so he really was a non-threatening type of personality, and someone that immediately could be sensed would be friendly.
Could you just briefly describe who some of his earliest influences were in the world of letters?
He picked up not only books from the library, but before he started getting interested in the library, he would find books that had been thrown away. And many of them were what you would call a dime novel. But he also picked up a book by Ueda, Signa, that had the last 40 pages missing. And Jack read and reread this book over and over again because the story fascinated him, because it had to do with a very poor Italian boy who grew up to love music and become a violinist and then become a famous composer. This was the rags-to-riches story that Jack London relished in his childhood. And so he invariably gravitated towards stories that told of success from being poor to being somewhere at the top. This was one of the things that that encouraged him very early on to continue reading, so that by the time he was a late teenager and had the guidance from Ina Coolbrith and others at the public library, he had seen enough of the social stratus around him and in other parts of the U.S. where he had traveled to believe that the capitalist class of that time was making all the money and living all the good life, and was essentially subjugating the working class to remain a working class and to never rise any higher.
The boy socialist.
And that's how he became the boy socialist.
Right. Mm.
Right. He was motivated to become a writer mostly for that reason, that he felt that he was not going to get out of the lower class with his strength and by working at a job. He had had the experience in a cannery, in a jute mill. He knew how they lived. He knew what it was like to work 12 hours a day mm-hmm. when he was quite young. So that when he was about the age of 18, he decided that he was going to make it by the use of his brain and not his brawn. And this was the beginning of his writing career.
Do you know offhand what his first published work was?
It's very interesting that his first published work had to do with his first big adventure.
The North.
This was earlier. This was when he was 17 and went on that seal sailing ship to Japan. When he got home, he wrote an article that he titled A Typhoon Off the Coast of Japan. And his mother encouraged him to enter it in the local newspaper writing contest.
Ah.
It was the Morning Call in San Francisco that offered a first prize of $25 for writing an essay. And as it turned out, Jack won first prize.
Wow.
Second prize went to a young woman from Stanford University, and third prize went to a young man from University of California at Berkeley. And here was this Jack London, whose education had come mostly from books, who had not finished high school, who suddenly had won first prize in an essay contest.
Wow.
So this was a jumping off point.
Yeah.
And this is the reason that his mother encouraged him to keep on writing, and which he did. And then he couldn't figure out what direction to go. So he would write poetry. He would write nonfiction, try to write as much nonfiction as possible, because that way it related to his life as he had seen it. And then he started to write fiction. So this began a long series of submitting manuscripts to publishers, mostly on the East Coast, where most of the publishers were at that time. And after hundreds of rejections, Jack London had a picture in his mind of this conveyor belt over at the publisher's office where the manuscript would drop in, go around the corner, and drop back into the mailbox to be sent out back to him. He knew that there had to be something like that. If you look at the time sequence of when Jack was first published, when he was 17, until that was 1893, until he got his first short story published in 1899 in a magazine, it really was not all that long.
Yeah.
That he was working away, plugging away, and writing hundreds of manuscripts during that period of time. He took it on his own to set his goal at 5,000 words a day.
5,000?
Yes.
That's amazing.
And he was so determined to achieve. At this time, he decided that that those who achieved faster usually went to university. So he was able to go to the University Academy, and it was a place where high school students were taught to prepare to enter University of California at Berkeley.
Uh-huh.
And so he went there basically for during what would have been like a senior year. They accepted him as a senior because he showed them what he already knew in their test procedure. And so they allowed him to enter. And within 4 months, he had achieved what the other students had taken 2 years to do. And yeah, he crammed for the University of California entrance exam. And at this time, he was studying 19 hours a day. He did this for, I believe it was a period of about 9 weeks. And he was helped by three friends. One who taught him English, to refine his English and grammar. Another one to teach him advanced mathematics. And another one to teach him chemistry. So with the help of these friends, he went through the three-day ordeal of an entrance exam at UC Berkeley and passed. And entered the university that fall. He was it was 1896, and he was going to be with a class of 00. But as it turned out, he lasted one semester in the beginning of the second semester, where the family finances were so small that things were bad, and he had to drop out. In a way, Jack London was not feeling real bad about this, and that was because he considered what was being taught to him at the university was really not as much involved as an education as he would like. He wanted to get deeper, and he was being given what he thought was a surface education. So after he dropped out, that was when he was in the midst of sending all these manuscripts in, and that was when he had started getting success with a magazine. The very first one was 1899, and that was the Overland Monthly Literary Magazine based in San Francisco that happened to have an editor who was Charmian Kittredge's aunt. Charmian Kittredge, of course, later married Jack.
Second wife.
So the Overland Monthly published a Jack London short story, To the Man on Trail. And
75 below zero.
Right.
Oh.
An amazing story.
Yeah.
Of survival, which is...
although he didn't survive.
How Jack London translated his life, that of survival. So it was natural that all the description in that short story would be so real because Jack felt it. So that was the first one, and they paid him $5 for that short story, and he had to wait and wait for payment because it wasn't coming. And it wasn't until he visited the office to demand his
money. The checks in the mail.
that they paid him. Before the end of the year, what's very important is the Atlantic Monthly published one of his short stories.
The Varsity League.
And so now he had an inn on the East Coast where in the past, and continuing actually in some ways to this day, Western authors are not considered in the same league as Eastern authors.
That's right.
So it was quite an accomplishment for Jack to be published in the Atlantic Monthly.
My.
Then from there, 1 year later, after several short stories had been published in magazines, his publisher, the publisher who he had submitted book to, accepted it. And this was a compilation of short stories, which he called The Son of the Wolf.
Yeah.
And 1900 was his first published book. So think of Jack London's published career. He wrote enough from 1899 until he died in November of 1916 to produce 50 books.
It's amazing. Incredible.
Seven of the books had not been finished as far as editing and typing when he died. And Charmian London, who typed for him and edited for him, put them together and sent them off, and they were published starting 1917, the year after Jack died. So three of them immediately were published during that year, and then more were published after that, so a total of seven after he died.
Are you aware of any other writers that Jack London had a direct involvement with, or that he encouraged or helped or whatever in that way?
Right. Yeah, there were a few. He had a very close friend that was a little older than Jack, named George Sterling, who was a California poet. And he entrusted Sterling to read his manuscripts and to feed back to him evaluations, which George did. And George, in return, got so close to Jack that he provided Jack with poetry that he had written for Jack to review. So they went back and forth. That was the main collaboration. He also encouraged writers like Sinclair Lewis.
I didn't know this. Huh?
Sinclair Lewis was a socialist, which is the way Jack met Sinclair Lewis. Sinclair Lewis was a young, struggling writer at the time that Jack was being successful. And so Jack indicated to Sinclair Lewis that he himself was very poor at figuring out plots. And so he asked Sinclair Lewis to sell him some plots. So he bought something like 20 different plots from Sinclair Lewis, but used only one. And unfortunately, the one he used was the book, the novel that he never finished, called The Assassination Bureau, which was later finished by the what had been the Jack London Trust that had been taken over by Charmian, and then again by Irving Shepherd, the son of Jack London's stepsister, Eliza. The book he was writing, The Assassination Bureau, that was never finished, he never could figure out exactly how to put the last part together. And so the Irving Shepherd family had the book finished by an author named Fish, and it was not published until 1964. So in a way, you can say that the Jack London's last book was published in 1964, but not totally true.
Was it used as a... Did it become a movie?
Yes, it did.
So Jack London basically wrote a movie script as well.
He did, and he actually helped out in the silent era with producers and directors on material from his writings in order to produce silent films. Jack, of course, dying in 1916, never got to see any talking films. Later on, when he had a servant to take care of him, the servant's job was to have all his materials ready for him in the morning, every day. And this meant 12 sharpened ink pencils, also his writing paper, and all the books that Jack London had set aside to be used the next day. And so he might write, if you look right behind me, to that beautiful coastal live oak, there used to be another tree right about where this fence is, and it was a black oak tree, and Jack would set up a small table and a chair and his writing materials and would sit up there shortly after breakfast and put in what he required at that time was at least 1,000 words a day.
He had dropped back from the 5,000-word day goal, huh?
Well, he had made it now.
Yes.
You know, I'm really glad that you're filming here because this is what's called the Jack London Cottage, the one and only place that Jack lived on his own ranch. This is a place where he and Charmian London, his second wife, moved into in September of 1911. And Jack, of course, died in November of 1916, so he had, you know, a very short ranch life here. I would like to point out some important features of the cottage. The cottage was originally built in 1863 by a Hungarian winemaker. Jack turned it into temporary quarters because he was already building the Wolf House, and as most of you know, the Wolf House burned down, and consequently, this turned out to be the only place Jack lived on his property. The most important area of the cottage is this section right here, where you see the left porch. This is Jack London's sleeping porch. He had a very small space, very Spartan. He just had a table, a chair, a lamp, and he would have the five or six books that he had chosen for that night, because he would read until he got sleepy and would sleep on maybe go on about 5 hours sleep a night. This is a very important room because this is where he went into a coma.
Ah.
That's where his manservant, Sakine, found him. Doctors who came to assist him were not able to bring him out of the coma. He was dying of kidney failure. And unfortunately, the kidney failure was the result of the lack of proper science in those days. In other words, it was not advanced enough. And in his trip to the South Pacific in the Solomon Islands, he acquired a tropical disease called yaws, which is a bacterial spirochete, the direct relation of syphilis. And in order to combat the open sores, he used mercury chloride for a period of almost 5 months.
Ooh.
The mercury, of course, went directly into the bloodstream, settled on the kidneys, and did its work over a period of 8 years before Jack had kidney failure.
Mm.
There are other contributing factors. Secondary was smoking. Jack smoked, by account, he lit up at least 80 cigarettes a day.
80?
Yes, 80.
Oh.
He was brought into Charmian's sleeping porch over here because she had a much larger space. And they cared for him there, and the only thing they could do was try to wake him, which they were not able to do. And so he died that night, at about 7:45 p.m. His body was taken the next day to Oakland, where it was cremated. It was brought back here to the ranch in an urn, a brass urn, and it was taken to a gravesite that Jack London had actually chosen himself. One day on a knoll, while he was on horseback with Charmian, his wife, he said to her, noticing that two children's graves that had been there since the year that Jack had been born, he said to Charmian, "You know, I wouldn't mind if I went before you, if you would lay me down here next to the children." Which is what Charmian did, and she had the ashes in a tiled hole that had been ready for them, and it was filled with concrete. A big red boulder was rolled over the top, and it was a silent ceremony. The rain, by Charmian's description, was very dark, dreary, and cold. But as the ceremony ended, Charmian said, all of a sudden, a ray of sunshine came through the clouds and shone directly on the gravesite. And that was the farewell to Jack.
Wow. Once again, Lou, thank you ever so much. This has been wonderful.
Good.